content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Money.com, Kiplinger.com, and also, if time permits today, continuing our readings from the book Money Hacks by Lisa Rowan. Our first article from Money.com, gold isn't the only precious metal soaring in price lately. There's been a lot of focus on gold lately as prices continue to set record highs in 2024. But gold isn't the only commodity soaring in price. Due to events that have impacted global and domestic supply and demand, a handful of other metals are also increasing the value and challenging all-time highs of their own. These metals, like silver, copper, and aluminum, are flying under the radar while experiencing price surges that might have investors considering opportunities beyond gold. Why are copper prices rising? Demand for copper in China and the U.S. is climbing, and because the principal driver is the green energy transition. This appears to be a sustainable long-term trend. Beyond its manifold industrial applications, copper is a critical component in solar panels, wind turbines, EV charging cables, and EV charging stations. According to Kelley Blue Book, 2023 saw a record 1.189 million EVs sold, making electric vehicles the fastest growing car category by sales. Additionally, U.S. Energy Information Administration data shows that last year, electric generating capacity from renewable sources surpassed both coal and nuclear and should be close to equaling the capacity of natural gas by 2025. This and ongoing demand for industrial uses like plumbing, electrical grids, and home appliances have been driving copper prices higher. The ductile metal is approaching its all-time high set in 2022 and is up 18.42% since hitting its six-month low in October of 2023. As a result, copper-backed equities are rising in tandem. Numerous exchange-traded funds, or ETFs, leveraged to the metal, like the Global X Copper Miners ETF, trading as COPX, which has gained 22.44% so far this year, are significantly outperforming the S&P 500's year-to-date gain of 6.24%. And silver's no longer taking a backseat to gold. Despite gold setting its all-time high in April, over the past month, the yellow metal has been outgained by silver 9.76% to 15.10%. Silver remains nearly 40% below its all-time high, but it's currently trading at its highest prices since the first quarter of 2013. Demand for the metal continues to outpace supply as silver and its alloys are integral to the manufacture of batteries, LED chips, medicine, nuclear reactors, solar panels, semiconductors, and touch screens. According to the Silver Institute, demand is expected to reach 1.2 billion ounces this year, which could mark the second highest level on record. Like gold, silver is seen as a safe haven asset that performs well during periods of geopolitical unrest. With tensions worsening in the Middle East and no end in sight for the war between Ukraine and Russia, the price of silver, which has increased 31.22% since Hamas attacked Israel last October, should remain elevated. Silver-backed ETFs are correspondingly on the rise. The iShares Silver Trust, or SLV, for example, has seen a 21.87% gain in 2024. And new sanctions on Russia propel aluminum prices. Aluminum futures were recently trading at their highest level since June of 2022 on the backs of new economic sanctions by the U.S. and U.K. against Russia, the world's third largest producer of the metal. With the global supply tightening, the price of aluminum is currently trading well above its one-year high. Though it's unlikely to challenge its all-time high set in March of 2022, aluminum is up 11.88% over the past month and likely to continue climbing as demand for the lightweight, durable, and corrosive-resistant metal increases. Accordingly to the World Economic Forum, demand is expected to increase by almost 40% by 2030 as transportation, construction, packaging, and the electrical sectors will drive demand and account for 75% of the total metal required. The rise for aluminum equities is similar to that of copper and silver, with major companies like Century Aluminum, Kaiser Aluminum, and Alcoa up 48.91%, 26.36%, and 9.79% respectively this year. Other metals tagging along and how to invest safely. Copper, silver, and aluminum aren't the only metals upstaging gold in 2024. Tin prices are being bolstered by outbreaks of violence in areas critically important to the mining of its ore in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Rwanda. Prices of the pliable metal have shot up 15.28% over the past month. Zinc is also joining the rally. China, the world's largest zinc consumer, recently saw its factory activity expand at the fastest pace in over a year, with similar trends developing in the U.S. and Germany. As a result, zinc prices have appreciated 9.68% over the past month. While base and precious metals are currently surging in price lately, short-term trends shouldn't dictate your investment strategies. For example, the aforementioned aluminum producer Alcoa saw its stock soar to an all-time high in the first quarter of 2022 amid ongoing supply chain issues. But investors who waited for the rally to invest saw their shares fall sharply over the following 6 months, with prices dropping around 63%. A safer approach to diversifying a portfolio with exposure to metals would be choosing an ETF that focused on a metal that isn't being propelled solely by short-term drivers. ETFs provide broad industry exposure by allocating funds across a basket of stocks, and this approach can be undergirth by choosing an ETF focused on a metal with long-term tailwinds. And from Kiplinger.com, Whole Life Insurance, a multi-purpose financial planning tool. Now, this article is written by Michael Aloi, a certified financial planner. In my 25 years of providing financial advice, I have found whole life insurance to be one of the most important yet overlooked financial planning tools on the market. From the guaranteed cash value to the income tax-free loans, the long-term care rider, and the long-term death benefit protection for my family, my whole life insurance policies have been an important part of my financial planning. Whole life insurance has many different uses. I often refer to it as the Swiss Army knife of financial planning. But before we get into the benefits of whole life, let's first review some background on how it works. Insurance for your whole life. As its name suggests, whole life insurance is life insurance intended to stay with you your whole life, whereas term life insurance is intended to cover only a specific number of years, say 20 or 30 years, then it goes away. Whole life insurance has a fixed level premium that does not increase in cost. It is a higher outlay than term life insurance, but with whole life, there is a savings component. Part of your annual whole life premium pays for the cost of insurance, and the balance is invested in a pool of conservative fixed income investments managed by the insurance company. This part invested is referred to as the cash value. In-life benefits. The cash value inside the whole life policy has two parts. There is a guaranteed value, which basically is a return on your premium over time. There is also a non-guaranteed value, which is the guaranteed value plus dividends. Most about dividends later. The cash value is your money, and it has several uses. You can access the cash value via a loan at any age for any reason or multiple reasons. If the loan is not repaid, it is netted against the death benefit when and if you pass. For example, let's say I withdraw $50,000 from my cash value to help pay for college. The withdrawal is an income tax-free loan. Should I never pay the loan back, the death benefit when I pass is reduced by the unpaid loan and the loan interest. The loan interest on withdrawals is variable, but usually is similar to interest rates on other secured loans like home equity loans. It's all about the dividends. With a whole life policy, the insurance carrier can credit your policy a dividend. For example, if the insurance company does a good job of managing expenses at the end of the year, they may refund some of your premium as a dividend. Dividends can be reinvested in the cash value or paid out to the policy owner. Dividends are not guaranteed and can fluctuate year to year, but can help the performance of the cash value. For those who fund their whole life policy year after year, there are many benefits. Here are five of those. Benefit number one, a disciplined way to save for the future. Whole life can act as a, quote, forced savings account. The reason is the premium must get paid, unlike funding an IRA or 401k, which is completely voluntary. Getting that bill every month forces me to pay the premium, part of which is allocated to the cash value. Many clients are grateful after 10 or 15 years of funding to wake up and see how the cash value has grown. Benefit number two, provides long-term life insurance protection and tax-efficient inheritance. You may need or want life insurance for longer than your term insurance lasts. If you still carry a mortgage in your 60s, you may be grateful to have whole life even when your term insurance expired. Even if you don't need the insurance protection, the death benefit can be left to the kids, grandkids, or charity, all income tax-free, unlike IRAs and 401ks, and no forced distribution schedule like the 10-year rule with IRAs. Benefit number three, the cash value is a part of your diversified fixed income asset allocation. Whole life cash value is invested in a large pool of treasury bonds, corporate bonds, guaranteed investment contracts, and other conservative investments. For this reason, I view whole life as part of my overall asset allocation. If I want to be 80% equities and 20% fixed income, the cash value in the whole life policy should count towards that 20%. Moreover, the cash value in a whole life policy may perform differently than other bonds I own elsewhere. Like in 2022, when most bond indices dropped by double digits, My whole life cash value continued to chug along unfazed. Cash value can provide another layer of diversification. And benefit number four creates another bucket of money to access tax-free in retirement. As mentioned earlier, withdrawals from a whole life policy are considered loans and are income tax-free. This can help with retirement planning and tax planning. Withdrawing money tax-free via a loan instead of taking an additional distribution from a 401k may help keep you in a lower tax bracket. The less taxable retirement income you have, the better the chance you have of paying less tax on your Social Security income, pensions, and retirement account. And benefit number five, riders can provide protection in the event of a total disability or a need for long-term care. Whole life insurance policies can come with two optional riders. One is the, quote, disability waiver of premium. With this rider, if the insured becomes totally disabled, the definition of totally disability varies, but usually it's a severe disability. The insurance company will allow the whole life policy to continue functioning as normal. This means the premium is waived, dividends continue to accrue, and the death benefit can grow without creating a loan. Usually, there is an age limit for this rider, such as premiums are waived till age 65. The second rider is the, quote, long-term care rider. This rider allows the insured to borrow against the cash value a certain amount of money each month to pay for long-term care, such as home health care or an assisted living facility, without creating a loan. The benefit is no loan interest accrues. A doctor will have to certify you qualify for care, and this usually means not being able to bathe or walk on your own. The arguments against whole life. Some say you should buy lower-priced term life insurance and invest the difference in premium for what a whole life policy costs in the stock market for greater growth. This sounds like a reasonable argument on the surface, but I have two concerns. One, many don't save the difference. They spend it because something always comes up. And two, there are no guarantees with the stock market. The risk slash return of whole life and investing in the stock market is completely different. Whole life behaves like fixed income. The stock market is riskier and rightfully should be more rewarding. I see whole life as the belts and suspenders to my asset allocation and my stocks elsewhere as the growth and opportunity. In times of market stress, guaranteed cash value looks pretty good. Some also say whole life is too expensive. True, whole life costs more than term life insurance, but they are different products. If you buy term life insurance, you can invest the difference in cost on your own. If you buy whole life, the insurance company invested for you. There are two different approaches, but to say whole life is, quote, too expensive negates all the benefits described above. Some may value whole life's long-term death benefit protection, diversification benefits, long-term care riders, and the disciplined savings. And finding a balance. In the end, I'd say give whole life a chance. Too many pundits scoff at whole life, given the higher outlay than term life. But it's naive to make blanket statements. If you are considering life insurance, you may want to take a look at some blend of whole life and term life for the reasons mentioned earlier. In the end, no one knows for sure what the future may hold, but at least whole life creates options for your future self, for your future self, with the cash value, long-term care rider, and the long-term death benefit protection. The more options you have, the better prepared you are for whatever life may throw at you. And from Money.com, Americans say they won't start a new job unless it pays nearly $82,000 per year. Americans now require more money than ever before to accept a job offer. On average, the lowest salary U.S. job seekers are willing to accept in order to take on a new job is $81,822, according to new data from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. This reading of the so-called reservation wage is the highest in the survey's 10-year history. This year, this time last year, that figure was just under $76,000, a difference of $6,011. The spike in the reservation wage suggests that, after years of dealing with elevated inflation, Americans are starting to demand higher starting pay. While the reservation wage is at an all-time high for both men and women, the average figures vary widely between them. On average, it takes about $95,500 to persuade men to take a new job, whereas women said they would accept roughly $66,300. Growing pay and job dissatisfaction. Currently, the average full-time worker is earning about $84,000, another series high. But that's not enough for a growing share of the workforce. The percentage of workers who say they are satisfied with their wages fell to 55.6%, which is down 4 percentage points from a year ago. Compared to last year, women in particular aren't as happy with their earnings, with satisfaction falling over 9 percentage points. Again, that could be due to persistent inflation. On top of that, the Federal Reserve is holding interest rates high in a bid to keep prices from soaring even higher. This strategy tends to result in a tamer job market. Simply put, when interest rates are high, employers have to spend more money on debt payments and less on wages. In terms of opportunities for promotions, less than half of all workers say they're satisfied. Women less so than men. A lack of advancement is part of what pushes many workers to look for employment elsewhere. And the Great Resignation 2.0. According to separate data from the Atlanta Fed, people who have switched jobs in recent years make more money than those who stayed put and waited for a raise. In 2022, during the height of the, quote, Great Resignation, period marked by millions of job resignations, the people who switched jobs especially earned a nice salary bump. Since then, the job-changing premium has shrunk, but switchers still consistently earn more than those who stay. Now, about 2 years after the peak of the Great Resignation, the New York Fed data suggests that workers are once again growing discontent, nearing the levels seen just before Americans started quitting en masse. One major difference is now high interest rates are keeping the labor market in check, and employers may not be as keen to hire as a result. This makes quitting riskier, so even though workers aren't very satisfied with their pay, questionable job prospects could be stemming to a potential wave of resignations. And while the labor market has indeed simmered since the pandemic, it remains strong by pre-pandemic standards. Still, this economic wane seems to be evident to the average employee. Overall, the New York Fed says workers are now more pessimistic about losing their job and finding a new job than they have been in recent years. And as we finish up our episode today, we will continue our readings from the book Money Hacks by Lisa Rowan. These are 275-plus ways to decrease spending, increase savings, and make your money work for you. And we will continue with Chapter 6, Protect Your Money, and moving to Money Hack number 235. put your credit on ice. Want to make sure no one opens new credit in your name? It's as easy as requesting a freeze. A credit freeze prevents lenders from checking your credit, which in turn means that no one can use your personal information to open a credit card or take out a loan. You'll still be able to check your credit report, and you can still use your existing accounts when your credit is frozen. Credit bureaus used to charge fees every time you wanted to freeze or unfreeze your credit. But now it's free for you to freeze or unfreeze your credit. To freeze your credit, visit each credit report's website, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian, to create a free account with each. You'll log into that account whenever you want to make a change to freeze to your free status. Remember to unfreeze your profile with each bureau before you apply for new credit. This is one of those money tasks that takes a few minutes to set up, but serves you in the long run. You probably don't even apply for new credit that often yourself, so there's no reason not to freeze your credit. And Money Hack 236, set up banking alerts. One of the easiest things you can do to keep your money safe is to set up your notifications for just about every sort of event that could take place in your account. It's easy to set up alerts to make sure you're the only one using your cards or accounts in the ways you want to use them, and make sure no one else is meddling in your banking activity. When you log into your bank account, credit card, or other financial account online, you'll find a security section that allows you to toggle on or off alerts for any number of activities. You can usually choose to have these notifications sent to your email inbox or to your mobile phone. Consider a few baseline alerts for your account. Low balance alerts. You'll get a notification when your balance drops below a level you specify. And purchase alert. You get an alert each time a purchase is made over a certain dollar amount that you set. And fraud alert. You'll get a message if your bank detects unusual activity on your account. These messages can be helpful if you avoid answering numbers you don't recognize to avoid robocalls. And we're out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is also available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.